from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. One in every four Americans dies of heart disease. Heart disease has been closely associated with LDL, bad cholesterol. So when scientists discovered a rare genetic mutation that causes those cholesterol levels to plummet, drug companies came to full attention. Right now, they're putting all their muscle into finding a cure that mimics the gene mutation. It could be a game changer in our cheeseburger-heavy culture, and it's a heck of a story. This hour on Point, the super rare mutant gene and the race for a super drug. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What would you do for a drug that floored your bad cholesterol? Do you have a mutant gene we could use? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will talk in this hour with the director of the National Health Lung, Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health, and with one of the top pharmaceutical companies racing to find the magic bullet cure for bad cholesterol, LDL. But joining me first from New York is Gina Colata, science writer for the New York Times, who has dug deep into this story. You can link to her big article, Rare Mutation Ignites Race for Cholesterol Drug, at our website, onpointradio.org. Gina Colata, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here.
This is some story, and it starts with, I guess, just maybe two people in the world and narrows down to one. The one who we sort of know is, 32-year-old aerobics instructor outside of Dallas. And what was it about her that's got everybody's attention? What is it, Gina?
Well, she has a double dose of this very rare mutation you mentioned, and her LDL level, that's the bad cholesterol, is only 14. Now, normally people's LDL levels are above 100, and even when they take statins, it's very difficult for most people to get them much below 100. Nobody, you know, this is just an unheard of level. But you think, well, can you even survive? Yeah, she's healthy and happy and has children and college educated. I mean, there's nothing obviously wrong with her. But she and people who have a single dose, and the people who had the single dose sort of would establish this, they seem almost immune to heart attacks. I mean, some of these people with a single dose of the mutation, they have higher than 14 for their LDL. But even though many of them were obese and smoked, had high blood pressure, they weren't getting heart attacks.
Single dose, double dose, by which you mean they got the mutation, inherited it from one parent or two, I guess.
That's right. And since it's a rare mutation, if you get it, you have to have each, in order to get a double dose, you have to have, both parents have to have one copy of one gene of their two that has a mutation.
They came across this mutation in the woman in outside Dallas and one other young, healthy woman in Zimbabwe who they've since lost track of. How do they even find these teeny tiny needles in the haystack with this very rare genetic profile?
Well, what happened was it started out in the opposite direction. Some researchers in France noticed this family where everybody was getting heart attacks and their LDL levels were just through the roof. And the question was, why? What's wrong? And it turned out that they had a mutation that made their LDL levels just soar. Really, really high. I mean, they had so much cholesterol. Some of them had like lumps under their skin of cholesterol. Yeah. And they send these people in Texas, these researchers, Helen Hobbs and Jonathan Cohen, said, you know, if yours is a mutation that goes one way, maybe you could also mutate the gene by knocking it out and make it go the other. These people had an overactive gene. They said maybe some people have the gene just knocked out. We'll look and see if we can find that. Mm-hmm. And that's where they found the people with the single dose of the mutation.
Did they just look through the records of cholesterol levels and look for people who had below 20 or below 15?
No. What they did was they looked at some big population studies and they looked for evidence of this particular gene mutation. And they found that there are people who had, it was rare, and it was mostly in African Americans, not in whites, as a matter of fact.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And they found that about 2% of the population, in the black population, had one copy of this gene called PCSK9 mutated. And if they had one copy of it mutated, their cholesterol levels were significantly lower than normal, and they just were not getting heart disease.
I mean, these levels are so low. You talk 14 or 15 for LDL.
Well, that's for this woman with two copies.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just crazy, unheard of. I mean,
doctors
would think they did the test wrong, I assume, if it came back at that level.
Absolutely. And a lot of people probably don't know. You know, my guess, the people who had one copy of the gene mutated instead of two, that was the common thing. They had low levels of LDL that were low, really low, like 40, 50, 60. Mm-hmm. But they may not have even, you know, people may have just sort of said, oh, you know, you're just some lucky person. Although that was kind of unheard of low, too, actually.
Yeah. What's the significance, then, of finding the person with the mutant gene or the double dose, as you say? Is it because here's, a 32-year-old young mom, aerobics instructor, you can have LDL this low and live? Or is it, let's look at the profile of this genetic mutation, and we can somehow then turn that or use that to develop a drug?
Well, it's both, because if this woman who had LDL of 14 was really sick, you'd say, you know, something's wrong with getting your cholesterol too low. So she was sort of, she and the woman in Zimbabwe were sort of like the proof that, or the evidence that maybe going lower and lower and lower isn't going to hurt you. And maybe because if you have one mutated gene, you don't seem to be getting heart disease, maybe going lower than we can ever get people with statins would be actually good. So then that set drug companies off. They said, you know, maybe we can find a way of making a drug that will mimic the effect of this mutation. Maybe we can find a new way of lowering cholesterol that doesn't involve statins and that will drive cholesterol much lower than statins could ever drive it. And then you have to start asking the question, how low is too low? Is there a threshold? Is there a point beyond which you don't get any benefit? Are there dangers of going too low? I mean, no one could even ask those questions before because no one could get that low. Now they can.
So here's the needle in the haystack of the woman with the mutant gene, and you've got then the drug companies piling in. We're going to speak with one of them, but describe to us, I mean, you talk about statins. So many Americans are on those now, Lipitor, Crestor, that whole realm, and they can bring it down. They can definitely lower, but not to this extent. What's the size of the market, and is this a good thing, or is this going to roll in and crush us with the cost of these new drugs?
Well, I think a lot depends on how much the drugs end up costing, because these are going to be, as they're produced now, they're going to be very expensive. But, of course, there's also, I guess, economies of scale. You're going to talk to the drug companies about this. But there's a chance, and also to Dr. Gibbons of the mm-hmm. Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, because he says that if the drugs are very expensive, and they might be, and if they, as they are now, are drugs that, you know, diabetics sort of inject themselves under their skin, with these drugs you have to inject yourself once or twice a month.
No,
not every
it's
day,
not a pill.
Once or twice a month. It's not a pill.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to inject yourself, and if they're super expensive, they might be reserved for people at the highest risk who just, you know, people who've had a heart attack, can't get their LDL levels down, can't tolerate statins, they really need this drug. If it turns out that they can make it as a pill, make it cheaply, it could be, you know, it could replace statins.
You've actually, I think, toured or visited at least one of these plants. It's already been sort of ramping up to go big time with production. What did you see, Gina?
This is an Amgen plant in Rhode Island, and they told me that they were preparing, they wanted to prepare to make a lot of this drug, more of this kind of a, this called a biologic, than anybody's ever made of any drug, because they anticipate a big demand for it. And they don't want to have a lottery for the drug if it gets approved, you know, because it takes so long to get ready to make it. So they're preparing. They're really getting ready. It's amazing because these drugs are made in living cells. So you have to make sure that everything all the time is sterile, which meant that we were sort of wearing like gowns, like for a surgical suite, even though the drug was being made behind glass. We couldn't even get in, you know, and then we had to do even more to get in sort of where the cells actually were. Everything was gigantic. If you've ever been in a chemistry lab, you'll see the size of the flasks and stuff. Well, these were, everything was blown up to like the size of a tanker truck or something instead of a laboratory flask. So you had these enormous production facilities with all these, with these gowned and masked workers with their goggles on and their special booties over their shoes, and then they they would check everything. Everything had to – it took years to train, apparently. I asked how long it takes to even train to work there.
Yeah.
These workers had to be trained for a couple of years, and at every step along the way, one person would do something and another person would check to see that it was done right, because this was so expensive, you can't afford to make a mistake or contaminate the cells at any step along the way.
So they're gearing up to go really industrial scale with this. We'll look at the implications of that. We'll talk with a top executive at one of these firms later in this hour, and with Dr. Gary Gibbons in just a moment. What about the aerobics instructor outside of Dallas? You know, does she know the sort of furor that her double dose mutation has created? Does she?
I think she does, but you know what? I can understand this totally. I only spoke to the researchers who are in contact with her. She didn't want her name used. She didn't want to talk.
That's fair enough.
And I thought, well, you know, because otherwise everybody in the whole world will say, there she is. there she goes, the one with the double dose.
Must be a little freaky. A lot of people read the book, you know, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lack.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Of course, that's where their genetic material was actually taken, and that's not the case in this story, but it must feel a little weird to be the model.
Be the one. Yeah, I know, it must. Well, I can understand why she decided not to be identified. I wish she had. I kept asking, are you sure? Wouldn't have to use her name, but she didn't want to.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the genetic mutation that crushes cholesterol and maybe heart disease, and the race to bring it to you as a drug. It's not sci-fi. It's medicine. They hope. Gina Collada has written about it in the New York Times. She joins us today from New York. With us right now from Bethesda, Maryland, is Dr. Gary Gibbons. He's director of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health. Big budget there, more than 3 billion, staff of more than 900 employees, paying a lot of attention to issues around exactly this space. Dr. Gibbons, Gary Gibbons, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
I wonder if you'd be good enough to explain the science here. How do we go from understanding, you know, from finding a mutant gene that apparently leads to incredibly low LDL cholesterol to a drug that might address that? How's that work, doctor?
Well, Tom, your listeners are aware that heart attacks are the leading killer of men and women in this country. And we've all been on this hunt to understand how can we prevent those heart attacks. And that comes from doing what we call discovery science, to try to identify what are the pathways that lead to a heart attack. And one of those keys is the risk factors that promote heart attacks, and that includes LDL cholesterol, this bad cholesterol. So then the hunt goes further. What are the factors? What are the pathways to determine who has a high LDL cholesterol, a high amount of that cholesterol that clogs the arteries that causes a heart attack? And that trail's been one that scientists have been on for a couple of decades. In fact, the Nobel Prize-winning work of Michael Brown and Joe Goldstein identified a key player in determining the LDL cholesterol level, and that's actually the LDL receptor that's on the liver. It's sort of a piece of Velcro that enables the liver to pick these LDL molecules out of the blood and promote their degradation in ways that can control the level of LDL. And in fact, their work led to the discovery of a target, an enzyme, that is the target for statins, the drugs that have really revolutionized cardiovascular medicine and been proven to reduce the risk of having a heart attack. And again, it's used by millions of Americans all the time. So it's this discovery science in the march toward identifying targets that then, in a part of a public-private partnership with commercial companies, that then develop these drugs that are able to have such an important impact on the public's health.
You are a very good explainer. Walk us on in, then, to the particulars in this case. It's a genetic profile that's been discovered here, a mutation. And somehow, when we find that mutation in the gene that promotes very low LDL, that raises the possibility of drug development. How do you go from one to the other? I mean, it's not as though we're lifting some genetic sequence out of this young woman in Dallas and replicating it? Or is it we look at its effect within the body and try to mimic it through it by other means? How's it work, doctor?
Well, in many ways, each of us as an individual, unless you have an identical twin, Tom, has a lot of variations in our genetic code. and it affects common things like your height and your weight, and that forms a bell-shaped curve, that middle being the average. But a lot of times we learn a lot from the extremes, the tails, what's rare. And in a sense, there's kind of an experiment of nature that you've actually described in some sense in those two women, in which individuals may develop a variation, a misspelling of the genetic code that tells us about how that protein, how that molecule actually works in the body and becomes manifest, in this case, by a very, very low LDL level. And that provides the first clue as to what that protein does and how it plays a role in figuring out whether you have a low level of this bad cholesterol or a high level. And so that's that clue that then scientists can dig and probe deeper on and understand, so what does that molecule really do? And in fact, that identification led to further science that tells us there's actually an interaction between this PCSK9 molecule, this molecule we've been describing with this mutation, that actually talks to the LDL receptor that I described earlier. It, in fact, the CSK9 influences how much of this LDL receptor is expressed on the surface of the liver. And again, the liver is the one that's plucking these LDL molecules out of the blood, kind of almost like an air filter, if you will, for the bloodstream. And so what the investigations started to unfold is that PCSK9, if it really is working actively, it's able to make sure there's plenty of these LDL receptors on the surface that are sort of cleaning and sieving the blood, removing the LDL cholesterol, and keeping that level down. And that was, again, where it was exciting as a potential target by the private industry to say, gee, if this molecule is so good at helping LDL receptors to work efficiently to pull out and lower cholesterol, maybe we can indeed mimic its action. And so that's how things move from discovery science, understanding the pathways that promote how the body works, to then seeing how we can manipulate the body's functions in a way that's therapeutic and helps patients.
And let me pursue that just a little further, because we hear from Gina Colata and others sort of a drumbeat over time now of mutations that are found that may affect other aspects of health. And in all these cases, you know, immediately the sort of jump to is this may allow us to produce therapies or drugs. I mean, when you look at making it, you learn about the mutation, it has some benefit, and you want to get to the therapy or the drug. As I understand what you're saying, Dr. Gibbons, you're not introducing the mutation into my genetic code, if I want to take this on board, rather, but you're looking to mimic the effect, the work of the mutation?
So exactly, Tom. It gives us a first clue, a first insight as to how that molecule works. You have tens of thousands of genes, and even those genes can produce different sort of flavors of proteins, the sort of nuts and bolts that gadgets that make your cells and body work. We're learning more and more about each of those proteins in your body and how they fit and work together almost in an orchestra to make your cell function. These are complex processes, and it's in these sort of experiments of nature where we see the rare, where we see the extremes, that we see a perturbation that tells us about how all the system fits together. But it's only just one clue. There are a lot of experiments, some of which, in this case, had to occur in mice and cells that gave us more and more clues about this PCSK9 molecule. So it's not simply just the mutation per se, but what that change in the code tells us about the human body and its biology and how it functions that then is providing that the next step to sort of say, okay, well, now that we understand how this works better, now we can maybe manipulate the system in a way that benefits the patient and is safe.
Gina, you know, I'm looking back over headlines here. This is not the first time that you as a reporter have, you know, come on a mutation related to some health problem, and the Times has got big headlines, you know, around Alzheimer's and mutation may aid drug quest, fat breakdown, gene mutation tied to that. There have been headlines about schizophrenia and gene mutation that may be create a target for new drugs. Have any of these panned out yet, Gina?
Well, You know, lots of times these mutations do pan out. That's where you get a lot of the drugs that are out there. In fact, a lot of the new cancer drugs that are out that are making a huge difference in cancer therapies are based on mutations that were discovered. So sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. What's interesting about PCSK9 is if you want to lower cholesterol, they are doing it. The question that you have to ask that probably should be asked, I'm sure I suspect Dr. Gibbons would agree on this, is not just have you lowered cholesterol to levels we haven't seen before, but has that improved your ability to protect against heart disease? You'd want to ask, do people who have cholesterol levels, LDL levels of 30, 40, 50, instead of 90, 100, 120, do you have fewer heart attacks? Do you have fewer deaths from heart disease? That's going to be the question. But they are in clinical trials with these drugs right now, as I guess you'll hear when you speak to Dr. Harper from Amgen. They are finding that people's LDL levels are dropping as expected. They are not finding bad side effects. But you always have to ask, it's always an unknown, are the outcomes going to be what you expected? In some situations like cancer, yes. With Alzheimer's, it's still an open question because they found things, they found drugs that should, that maybe would work, but now they're saying they're starting too late in the disease where the brain is already a mess. It's already lost too many cells. Maybe you've got to start earlier. So there's always a special situation for each one of these things. And one of the problems is that drug development takes years, years and years. And so when you say something has been discovered, it's not like you're going to have an answer tomorrow.
Heart disease, biggest killer in the country. A whole lot of people with bad cholesterol who think about it a lot, many already on drug statins that can bring it down. This genetic mutation may be point the way toward maybe a drug that could bring it way, way down to levels never seen before. Gina Collada writes about it for the New York Times. Dr. Gary Gibbons is right at the top of a huge pyramid of work on this. He's director of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health. And there is a huge race on right now in the pharmaceutical industry to swing in behind all this and turn it into something that may be therapeutically useful. Let's go right now to Thousand Oaks, California, and Dr. Sean Harper. He's Executive Vice President of Research and Development at Amgen, along with Pfizer and Sanofi, one of the firms that is throwing the kitchen sink at this right now. Sean Harper, Dr. Harper, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, it's great to be on.
How big an opportunity do you see for fending off heart disease?
Well, I think as Gina and Gary have explained, it really is a remarkable opportunity because stepping back again, this is in Western countries the number one killer, cardiovascular disease, much of which is mediated by atherosclerosis, much of which is mediated by elevated LDL. And so, and as we look around the planet as countries westernize and unfortunately there's more sedentary lifestyle, smoking, eating at McDonald's, et cetera, obesity, this kind of problem is likely to be increasing around the world rather than decreasing. And so the opportunity to be able to help patients who are not adequately served by the statin medications is a great opportunity. A fairly large proportion of patients who are under a physician's care and every attempt is being made to lower their LDL cholesterol, particularly patients who are at high risk, have a lot of risk factors, maybe have had a prior event like a heart attack or stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty high proportion, maybe 2 out of 3 of these high-risk patients can't get to the currently recommended goals for their LDL cholesterol. And it's really in that population where the ability to add on an inhibitor of PCSK9 would be of such tremendous value.
You've already got 3 factories up and ready in Colorado, in Puerto Rico, in Rhode Island, and big stuff there. How close are you to what here in the process, you and others, Sean?
Yeah, so we're in the latest stages of clinical testing. as you know, this whole process is a 10 to 15 year kind of process, and we're now in the final stretch of the last couple years here, to get the drug actually to patients. And the lead time that's required to invest in those factories and to build that capability to manufacture these very complex biologic, in this case, this is a monoclonal antibody, which is produced by cells, as Gina explained. The lead time is significant, and the capital investment is significant. And so, as is the nature of our business, we take substantial high, risk endeavors like this to build that all at risk in parallel with doing the late-stage phase 3 studies. And as Gina pointed out, we have studies that are designed to demonstrate that we can lower LDL cholesterol in this 50 to 70% kind of effect size, whether that's on top of patients who are on top of statin therapies that patients are already taking, or in patients who can't tolerate statins, for example. But we also have a very large cardiovascular outcomes trial, which is now running, which is designed to definitively demonstrate that not only do we reduce the LDL, but as the human genetics predict, we're actually going to reduce the incidence of heart attack, stroke, sudden death, those kind of outcomes. And these all represent enormous investments. There are approximately 30,000 patients that are being tested in these trials.
Wow. Sean Harper, standby in California. Lots of callers on all of this. Carrie in Buffalo, New York. Carrie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention, I actually have always had freakishly low cholesterol. The first time I was tested in my 20s, my entire number was below 100, so the machine where they were doing it at my business couldn't actually measure it. And then once I finally did have it done, my LDLs are 44. And all of the females in my family have been like this, and most of them have lived into their mid to late 90s.
Wow.
None of us pay any attention to our diet, and none of us do any of that. I actually have a really terrible diet, and I eat a lot of fast food and stuff like that. So I know that they were saying that they were afraid that if they lower people's LDLs that they might develop bad habits, but there's no cancer in the women in my family. There's no heart disease in the women in my family, and we all have freakishly low LDLs, and so I'm,
Carrie, send your genetic profile right over. Everybody's interested in reading it. I mean, Sean Harper, 44, as an LDL for somebody who grabs a cheeseburger anytime she feels like it. How unusual, how odd is that, Dr. Harper?
Yeah, it's not common, and it certainly suggests the possibility of a variant in one of the genes involved in the regulation of LDL. It could be PCSK9. It could be others that we either understand or don't yet know about that would, travel genetically within a family and predispose to low cholesterol, just as we have situations where people are unusually tall or unusually short or have, eye color, things
right,
of that sort. These things are determined by genetics largely, that's a real possibility when you hear this kind of a vignette.
Dr. Gibbons, Gary Gibbons, are you thinking how do we get in touch with Carrie to get her gene profile in our data bank, or are there enough?
Well, certainly that's an area of active research in which we are engaged in discovery science to look for additional variants that are important in risk of cardiovascular disease. It's also important to point out, though, that even patients who respond effectively to statins, we strongly encourage all patients to still adopt those additional lifestyle behaviors reduce their overall risk of cardiovascular disease.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the genetic mutation that appears to crush cholesterol and maybe one day heart disease. And the race to bring all that to you, it's not sci-fi, we're told. It's medicine, they hope, or maybe one day soon. Gina Colotta is with us from the New York Times. She's written about it all. You can link to her great story at our website, onpointradio.org. Dr. Gary Gibbons is with us, very, very big figure in this field, director of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health, joins us from Bethesda, Maryland. And from Thousand Oaks, California, Dr. Sean Harper is with us, Executive Vice President of Research and Development at Amgen, one of a number of big pharmaceutical companies making very big investments on the back of the insights that have been gained out of some incredible genetic mutations that drive LDL, bad cholesterol, incredibly low. Dr. Harper, let me bring this to you from online. Lots of comments there. Here's one who says, this will surely be quite popular with Americans who want their one-pill quick fixes so they can hang on to their bad habits. For people who have some sort of genetic issue that causes their levels to be dangerously high and are forced to take meds, great. Everyone else should just get their acts together and eat right. Jeesh, our listener says. What do you say, Dr. Harper?
Well, as Gary pointed out, it really is important for people to pursue, a healthy lifestyle, diet, exercise, avoiding risk factors like smoking and hypertension, for many different reasons. And I don't think that this class of drug, any more than statins, will alleviate that need to pursue a healthy lifestyle. That said, unfortunately, if you know people who have struggled with high cholesterol levels, an awful lot of the cholesterol level in the blood is, in fact, genetically determined. And even when people make extraordinary efforts with their diets, exercise, et cetera, the effect of all of that can be fairly modest, and adding even a low dose of a statin can have a fairly dramatic effect in comparison to those interventions. Now, all those healthy lifestyle interventions have other benefits in terms of avoiding cancer, type 2 diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. So there's many reasons that people should not use these medicines to feel that they're off the hook, if you will, from pursuing a healthy lifestyle. But when patients have LDL cholesterol that is well above the goal that we're trying to achieve in the clinic, in the doctor's office, and we can't get there with existing therapies, an intervention like this PCSK9 inhibitor could be literally life-saving.
Let me go to Chris in Montgomery, Alabama. Chris, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have extremely high cholesterol, around 325. I tried statins, but I cannot take them. We had to do a muscle biopsy, and it proved that I cannot take statins because it degenerates my muscles. I tried going vegan for a whole year. It had no effect on my cholesterol.
Wow.
I exercise 3 to 4 times a week. I'm a competitive swimmer. I try to eat as healthy as I can, but it really has no effect on this my cholesterol. This would be wonderful if I could get involved in this. This would be great.
So the sooner the better, and count you in. Well, let me bring that first to Sean Harper. Sean, are there trials going on now? Are you looking
absolutely
for people like Chris with that kind of tough profile?
Absolutely, and I think it is important that Chris identify probably at a university medical center specialists that help patients with this kind of level of cholesterol abnormality. This again sounds like something which is genetic in origin, and these conditions are fairly well understood these days. And in fact, in those kind of clinics that care for patients with this kind of hypercholesterolemia problem, the companies involved in development, including Amgen, are doing clinical trials that are specifically designed to demonstrate the ability for PCSK9 inhibitors to cut the cholesterol levels by, again, in this sort of 50% to 70% range. So I'd strongly encourage Chris to look for a physician who can help them with that. You can also call into our, look on our webpage and call into our medical information system and get information about the investigator sites that might be near you that are conducting these trials.
What kind of timetable do you think this is on in terms of testing and potential rollout?
You know, I think that we're anticipating that companies will be submitting applications for these drugs to regulators around the world, such as FDA, sometime in next year, or the early part of the following year. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it typically takes around a year for regulatory review to take place. And if regulatory agencies agree that, you know, these are important therapies to provide to patients, then medicines could become available in that time frame. So we're really, as I mentioned, you know, just a couple years away from that goalpost, which is at the end of, in this case, sort of a 10 to 12 year journey.
But it won't be as easy as popping Lipitor. You're talking injections here, and maybe twice a month. Would those have to be at a medical center?
No, the injections would be done by the patient using devices that are designed to make the administration easy and as painless as possible. And, you know, one thing I would comment is that 9 out of 10 of our therapies are these injectable therapies. And I started my industry career at a pharma company that did just, you know, pill mm-hmm. drug development. And when I came to Amgen, I was really not very educated about this. But I've learned over the more than 10 years that I've been here that patients actually learn to accept injections quite readily when they have serious, you know, really grievous risks and medical problems and need to address those. And once a patient has actually compared injections on an infrequent basis, several once a month, for example, that they do themselves with a device, to having to remember to take a pill every day or even once a week, patients often actually prefer, believe it or not, injection.
Gina Collada,
remembering to take a pill every day is not an easy thing, and many studies have shown that adherence with that kind of regimen is dismal.
Well, maybe, though. Injections, they have their own issues. But Gina reports that when this first comes out, it is almost certain to be very expensive. What range of monthly costs is being talked about, Sean?
Well, certainly, you know, biologics are complex medicines to develop and manufacture, and you know, this one's no different, and the prices that we set are these days very much a kind of a negotiation around the world with the payer around the value that the medicine is bringing, you know, to patients, to the healthcare system. You know, one way to think about this is what's the cost of not having the drug?
No, I hear all that, and we know it. But I mean, we know these things can be just astoundingly expensive. Are you thinking, is it $1,000 a month range? $5,000, $10,000? Who knows?
Yeah, no, we're a long way from being able to establish pricing right now for this, but as Gina pointed out earlier, you know, it always is a consequence of our requirement to recoup the investment that we've put in during the exclusivity period for these products, and so there is a volume price relationship. And obviously, if this drug is being used in a broader patient population, then that tends to drive prices lower than when we have to price drugs for very small subpopulations in cancer settings and that sort of thing.
Gene, of course, nobody knows, but you're our lay expert here. What kind of range can you imagine this might come out at in terms of cost?
I really feel uncomfortable even guessing. I mean, we all know that cancer drugs cost really a lot. But
like what? Just put some number out there.
Some of the new cancer drugs cost more than $100,000 a year, but as Sean Harper just pointed out, these are for very small populations.
Okay.
So that's why. But then the arthritis drugs, which are also injected, Dr. Harper can give you the estimate. I think Amgen makes one of those, but they cost less, and it's a bigger population.
Like what?
That's also biologic. I asked Dr. Harper because seriously, I don't remember what he told me, but he did tell me a price.
Those tend to be in the $10,000 a year type of range, and then there are you know, biologic products for osteoporosis, for example, that we market that are, you know, several thousand dollars per year, for example.
Gina, so do you think regular insurance would cover this new cholesterol drug if and when it comes out and is approved?
It's, you know, once again, it's really hard to say. Insurance covers a lot, almost every, insurance covers everything we've mentioned so far. And often things like people, groups like Medicare don't take price into account in general when they're deciding whether they're going to pay for something.
Yeah.
And if Medicare pays for something, then insurers tend to pay for it too. And there is that point that Sean Harper made, which is, what's the cost of not doing it? Because the cost of having a heart attack is astronomical. So there's a lot of things that go into this that go beyond the question of how much is it going to cost an individual. On the other hand, if you're uninsured and you want some of these things, it can be pretty difficult.
Let's go to Evan in Natick, Massachusetts. Evan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Tom. Mm-hmm. So my question is LDL all bad? I've read that there's a small, dense LDL and a light, fluffy LDL, and the light, fluffy one might actually be benign or helpful, and a small, dense one is actually bad. So does this drug target one or the other, or does it bluntly target LDL? And what are the implications of that?
Wonderful question. Dr. Gibbons, what do you say?
Well, certainly the caller is describing some of the complexities of lipids. And certainly one aspect of driving the overall LDL receptor, LDL cholesterol level down, will have that benefit on some of these other subspecies. But it really indicates, again, why it's important for us to do the clinical trials to actually show that a given agent working at a given target actually prevents heart attacks is also a critical question that needs to be addressed that will determine what the market is, what the demand will be, because there are going to be processes that may not be as sensitive to this particular target that are nevertheless critical to determining whether someone has a heart attack or not. So that's why we need the controlled trials, some of which are underway, to really address that as a final question.
I mean, statins are already so huge. Do you worry, Dr. Gibbons, that in our, you know, face it, in spite of all the exhortations to eat right and exercise more, I mean, report after report, just yesterday a big one coming out, just showing how far we are nationally from doing that. Do you worry that if we come up with a super drug like this, we just kind of lean into it as a nation, all get on this super expensive thing instead of living right, eating right, and, you know, the cost of it breaks the bank?
Well, it's a critical question, Tom. And in fact, even though we know statins work, we know they prevent heart attacks, there's still probably 50% of American patients out there who we know ought to be on a statin who aren't, and who aren't receiving that benefit. So that's one of those things that's often lost in translation in terms of when we find out these studies are done, that to be sure that all the patients are really getting all the benefit. So it's really critical that we continue to work with these health systems and patients and their education to be sure that indeed they follow through and reap the full benefits of these innovations.
Here's a listener online. James says, of course, we'll be in a pickle if when they find out that super low cholesterol either doesn't really help some cohort or another, or that super low cholesterol has other effects such as increased risk of stroke or something. What about the potential problem with getting, you know, is there a worry about that, Dr. Gibbons, if we get down to these really sub-basement levels, teeny tiny, you're getting down towards single-digit levels of LDL?
Well, certainly that's, again, why the randomized controlled trials are so critical, that there have been a number of other circumstances where a drug comes in and we're able to manipulate a molecule. Actually, a recent example is another form of cholesterol called the HDL molecule.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that by increasing that molecule's number, and the trials look great in terms of being able to do that. Unfortunately, though, it didn't confer the clinical benefit, the prevention of heart attacks that everyone had sort of predicted. That's why we have to be a bit cautious in our optimism that indeed this is going to be the sort of magic bullet that it certainly holds promise for. That's why those trials need to be done as they're underway, and really the jury's still out as to whether indeed these new agents will be as good or better than statins in that regard.
Dr. Harper, you're in this up to your elbows with Amgen making a major investment here. What have you learned so far out of this genetic mutation and the therapy research that you're doing? You know, what upside surprise have you found? What's concerned you?
Well, you know, it's been a fascinating journey so far, and we were, you know, going back to the questions you were asking earlier, we were in order to understand how PCSK9 really works and Gary explained that quite elegantly. We were able to develop, a monoclonal antibody, which is essentially the same molecule that your body uses to defend itself against foreign invasion by bacteria and viruses and so on. And that antibody, though, is very exquisitely, selectively targeted at PCSK9, which is floating around in the blood, and we can tie up the PCSK9 and make it unavailable to do its action on the LDL receptor, as Dr. Gibbons explained, thereby increasing the numbers of LDL receptors on the surface of the liver.
Because it won't shut down that activity, so it's free to just clean up LDL all day.
Exactly. So the LDL receptors are then unleashed to do their thing, and that is an important way that this is working. Now, as we took that monoclonal antibody through animal testing, tested it in animals, we saw dramatic effects. The first patient set that we actually just normal subjects that we put the molecule into, we saw these dramatic decreases in LDL cholesterol. And what was really the most surprising result probably was the fact that it turns out that when you treat people with statins, statin therapy actually increases the expression of PCSK9. So
whoa.
If you treat someone with statins, PCSK9 levels tend to be a little higher, and so we actually see a bigger benefit in someone.
We've got it, but we're out of time. A lot happening right here. Sean Harper with Amgen, Gary Gibbons, Gina Colata, thanks to all of you for joining us. This is On Point.